Hi, this is Morgan Michael welcoming you to Kindsight 101, the podcast, where you'll hear from world-renowned educational leaders about the mobilizing power of kindness. I believe that we all have an innate need to be seen, heard, and understood. When we dedicate ourselves to kindness, the ripple effects in our schools can be life-changing. Through this podcast, I want to challenge you to question your assumptions, amplify your insight, and embrace a willingness to go beyond the status quo in education. Together, let's learn how to make a big impact, one small act at a time. All teachers want their students to develop a sense of agency over their learning, but many of us simply want an easy-to-follow, laid-out roadmap to do so. Back again with her wisdom, wit, and wealth of creativity, Adrienne Geer teaches us about her three-step, inquiry-based, powerful understanding model and how we can enable students from K to 12 to develop a deep understanding of themselves, others, and the world around them. Be sure to catch part two of this interview for a deep dive into specific lessons around developing kindness, compassion, friendship, morality, social justice, and more. Adrienne Geer has been a teacher in the Vancouver School District in Canada for over 18 years, working as a classroom teacher, ESL teacher, teacher librarian, and district literacy mentor. Adrienne developed Reading Power almost 10 years ago and has since been working with teachers in many districts throughout the world to bring her knowledge to other teachers. She is the author of six best-selling books, including Reading Power and Writing Power, and has just completed her sixth book, Powerful Understanding, helping students explore, question, and transform their thinking about themselves, others, and the world. Find her online at readingpowergeer.com or on social media by searching Adrienne Geer. For more information about her books, book lists, blog, resources, and workshops, visit my website, smallactbigimpact.com, and search for episode 9. Thanks for listening. I want to thank you for the wonderful reviews that you've left for this podcast on iTunes. Your reviews make a big difference in helping other educators find this show. If you think that I'm doing good work here and you'd like others to get inspired and join our 21-day kindness challenge and movement, I'd love it if you would take a minute, head over to iTunes, and leave a review. Thank you so much. So we have entered into what some people have called this conceptual era, a time of big ideas and futuristic thinking. I believe that we all need to teach our students to examine their assumptions as they interact with the world, and then in doing so, we're better able to become aware of some of those significant problems that exist on a global level or nationally and even locally. So as a result of that understanding and then that empathy that one develops on the road to developing this new understanding, people are able to take more effective action to make meaningful change in the world. So can you discuss this concept in relation to your journey with your incredible new book, Powerful Understanding? You're well known for your work with Reading and Writing Power and then the nonfiction and the fiction support systems that you've given teachers. And that's really encouraged educators to develop this deep thinking and those strategies like connecting and visualizing and questioning and inferring and transforming with their students. Why is it important to help our students become meaning makers, not only in the texts and the curriculum that they encounter, but really within the context of their lives?
So I guess the journey of this book really, I mean, I have to go back to this, the foundation of Reading Power in a way, because Reading Power has been sort of, I guess it started for me almost 12 years ago, where I saw this gap in reading instruction, and a lot of teachers were focusing primarily on teaching students the code, the decoding strategies, with the assumption that once you know how to decode, that you also know how to comprehend. But a lot of teachers experience what we call master decoders, children who just are able to read the words on the page but do not engage with that text and find meaning. Mm-hmm. So Reading Power kind of evolved out of this gap that we saw in kind of reading instruction in general, where I looked at the fact that if we do some assessment for reading, we see strong decoding skills, but children are struggling with comprehension. It's because we are not necessarily teaching the comprehension in the same aspect or the same regard as we teach the decoding. So basically, reading power started as a way of filling the gap and trying to elevate students' understanding of text rather than just decoding of text. So reading power started, and honestly, like it's kind of just taken on a life of its own. And I think breaking thinking down into those specific strategies and giving comprehension something concrete for children and teachers to hold on to really made a difference in the way children responded to text. Mm-hmm. So BC has come out with a redesigned curriculum. And as you mentioned, it's all about big ideas and inquiry-based learning and really thinking about content in a different way. I think when I was a student and when I began teaching, we were the teacher was the all-knowing deliverer of content, and we would teach the children, you know, all they needed to know, and then they would memorize it and basically give it back to us in a test. But I think I've experienced what many people experienced. You can memorize information, but still not understand it.
Yes.
And so with this new design curriculum, there's this really important kind of step that teachers are trying to make in moving from that content-driven curriculum into a more sort of process-driven curriculum and a more an inquiry-based driven curriculum.
Yeah.
So the issue is how do we get to that place? Mm-hmm. And what I find as a teacher and working with teachers, it's hard when new curriculums are presented to us with dramatic shifts in focus. And we all embrace, I truly believe we all embrace this shift. But the challenge for teachers is how do you actually make, what does that look like in a classroom? And I think what Reading Power did is it helped break this idea of understanding text into something manageable and tangible and concrete.
Yes.
And so what I wanted to do with this book was look at, is there a way to try to build a foundation of deep thinking within the context of our new curriculum to help teachers to know how to teach not just a content-driven approach, but more an inquiry or a process-driven. So the powerful understanding came out of that question. If reading power is really working and it's helping to bridge that gap between decoding and content, sorry, decoding and comprehension, could I take that notion of deepening an understanding of text, but broadening the context so that we are looking at deepening understanding of learning. Mm-hmm. And so what I took from the reading power was sort of this idea of creating a model and creating a language that teachers can use and that children can use that makes this more abstract concept of thinking into something a little bit more concrete. So that was my goal. It was a challenge for me because it's difficult to wrap your head around this idea of deep thinking and big ideas and big understanding. And for teachers, it's hard to make that shift, as I was saying, but it's even harder to make the shift and then put it into the context of the classroom. So I'm a very practical and visual person. And so I feel like those are some of the things that I can bring to teachers to support them in this transition into really a lot of new ideas for teaching our students.
I think that's so great. And exactly like you said, this model or this roadmap is what many teachers need, because these ideas can be so big and overwhelming and really wonderful. But also, you're right, how do we break it down into the little pieces that make up the day-to-day interactions that we have with our students, the language that we use? And so sort of developing a map that we can, to a certain degree, kind of follow in one way or another to get there. And then from that point, I mean, people can make it their own, but it's so important for educators to have something like that, because it gives us all a better sense of where we're headed. And even within the context of a school or a district, if we're all using similar approaches or language that the kids Absolutely. Are able to transfer that understanding from year to year and build on it instead of starting from scratch and not being able to make those connections between different models. So I really appreciate that.
And I really saw that part of the value of what happened with Reading Power. I felt like that was almost the key, was that common language and that common model for thinking that really helped kind of reinforce it all through grades, all through classes, districts, exactly what you were saying.
Mm-hmm. So I would love to dig into that powerful understanding model and some of the really interesting ways that you've found to make it accessible to little and younger students in the primary and elementary years, and then also to use the same model but different language for the upper middle grades and even into high school. Can you speak to that model a little bit and how you use it?
So what I was trying to come up with was something relatively simple that, as you said, could be used in all different grades at all different levels, but be that kind of common structure. I love your phrase of the map that we're sort of following. So I did a little research to try to look at what other people had possibly sort of developed for a visual for critical thinking. That was kind of my starting point. And what I noticed in a variety of different models of what does critical thinking look like, that they were very text dense. And so what I like to do is have something that I can put up in the classroom, but the ones that I was looking at, the downfall for me was that they had too many words on them. But what I loved is that what I started to notice with these other models of what does critical thinking look like, where there were some common words, some common phrases. And so I started to write down what were these words that were kind of appearing in these different sort of visuals. And so I loved this idea of creating, a simple model with some key words and key phrases that I wanted to be able to apply to all different things that students are learning. That was another key. It needed to be generic enough that it wasn't just specific for a particular type of content or a particular type of inquiry, that it was more of a universal model. So one of the things that I noticed in some of these ones that I had looked at is there was a flow, a fluidity of what our brains go through when we are thinking critically. And so this was one of the things that was important to me, that it was some kind of a flow chart or some kind of movement or fluidity that we can kind of take our brains into this process. So the first part of critically thinking is, and the word that I use is explore. So that's the key. So if you could kind of visualize a triangle of three circles. So the top circle, the word in that is explore. So this is the part of learning that we really are exploring the content. This is where teachers are teaching, students are researching. There might be reading a chapter in their social studies book or an article or going to the library and finding information. This is the learning piece. And one of the things in the new curriculum is we want children to be able to find their own topics for exploring. And so this model is something that I want children to be able to use independently once they understand kind of how it works. Mm-hmm. So The exploration piece is the gathering of information, the gathering of content. Mm-hmm. So once we gather the information that we're learning about, we need to now interact with that. And so the next part of critically thinking is we move from taking all that information in, and now we move to that next circle in the triad, and we're my phone is ringing.
That's okay.
Sorry, can you edit that
out? I sure can. Yeah, I just made note of the time, so no problem.
Okay. So the second circle in the triad, the word inside there is interact. And interact is where we take the information that we've gathered, but we don't just take it at face value. Now we need to kind of use our strategies that I use a lot for reading power too, is connecting, making connections to that. Does this information remind us of anything else that we already know about or experienced? To question it, to ask questions. What are you wondering now about this information or this topic? What are some things that you're possibly visualizing or inferring? And so this is where we move from just that content-driven, taking all this information in and then memorizing it and giving it back. Mm-hmm. This is what I call trying to make it stick. When I was in university and I memorized information and went into the, you know, the exam and wrote it and took all that information from my head and put it on the paper, I would walk out of that exam room and I wouldn't be able to remember anything.
I know.
When you strictly memorize information from your brain and then you give it back, but you haven't interacted with it, mm-hmm. there's nothing in your brain that's making that stick. Mm-hmm. And so in order to try to really understand something deeply, you have to make those connections and you have to interact with the information. So we've got exploring the content. Mm-hmm. Now we're moving into interacting with the content. And then the final circle is, it took me, again, this looking through all the different words that we could use, and I played around with a lot, but the word I concluded for that final circle is the word develop. And develop is that taking it to the next level of thinking. So what we want our students to be able to do is, once you've learned the content and you've interacted with it, we need to take them to that place of developing their own understanding and their own interpretation, and that idea of how information changes us and makes us think in a different way. So that developing circle is where we look at the content and we say, okay, well, that's really interesting because I'd never really thought about it that way before. Mm-hmm. But now that I've learned this and I've questioned it and I've connected to it, I'm thinking about this in a different way. Here's what I'm thinking about now. So it's that kind of next place. And I always say to students, like, after you finish learning something, we can't finish thinking about it. Thinking is that continual, okay, what am I thinking about this now? And it's coming back to our own ideas and revisiting and reorganizing our thinking. And so that last develop circle is really where we get to that place of deep understanding. And so if you visualize those three circles, there are double-sided arrows spacing in between, so that, again, just to represent the fact that our thinking isn't ever sort of in going in one direction all right. the time, that we have that fluidity and that flow of thinking, that we can always go back to make a connection or ask a question or gather more information if we're still struggling to figure something out. The basic model is explore, interact, develop. Now, for early primary children, what I tried to do to help them with that model is I gave them a little cue like a word or a phrase that helps them kind of know what does your brain do when you're going through this process of thinking. So the cues are, so when I'm exploring information that's new to me, I might be going, this is interesting. And then when we get to the second circle, it's, And that's when you're starting to question it and connect to it. And then this third circle is, now I'm starting to figure this out a little bit more. So it's that, And so that language and that little cueing system is something that teachers can use when they're helping their students kind of go through that process. For intermediate students who might not be sitting in a classroom in a grade six class going, I gave them just a different way of looking at it. So the explore is what, and then the next circle is so what, and then the third one is now what. So it's what, so what, now what? And that's a way of also helping a little bit older students kind of understand what each of those circles are. So that's great. Kind of the way the model works. And basically, whatever the teachers are teaching, whatever your topic of inquiry is, or the subject that you're exploring in whatever grade you are teaching, you can use that flow or that map to help students get to a place of new understanding. Because what we're trying to do is move them away from just memorizing the content and giving it back. We want to take them through that critical thinking process, or that I call it the powerful understanding.
It's so wonderful. And I love how you've talked about the fact that this model can actually be really structured by the teacher, and that the goal would be that you would release that responsibility where they are coming up with their own topics or themes that they're exploring and their questions, and then moving into that developing phase on their own even. And I see that especially working in the intermediate grades as well, where students might have particular interests that are really, really specific. And through this model, they're able to explore that and, like you said, interact with it and then develop or create something. I bet you some of those words came up for you, create and innovate and those types of words within that development.
Yes, create is a big one. And I played around with that word for a while, but there is this underlying meaning of create that sounds a little bit more artistic, like creating creating something, like creating a project or creating a model of some kind. And while that is a way of developing, I wanted to kind of make it more metacognitive rather than like the project type thing, because that's really interesting that you brought that up, because one of the things that I've noticed when I've been visiting classrooms and talking to teachers about, you know, inquiry-based learning is I feel like there's a little bit of a gray area and maybe a bit of a misunderstanding between the difference between project-based learning and inquiry-based learning.
Yes.
And I feel like with project-based learning, teachers may think that it is inquiry, because in an inquiry-based or a project-based learning, children are choosing their own topics that they want to explore, and they're researching and learning on their own independently, and then they're coming up with a way of sharing that information. But if all the children are doing is creating a project or creating a PowerPoint or creating kind of a here's what I learned about my topic, and they're not taking it to that next level of developing deeper understanding, then to me it's more of a project as opposed to an inquiry. To me, an inquiry-based learning or inquiry-based project, yes, you gather information. Yes, you share it. Yes, you tell what you've learned, but you have to then take it to that third stage where you really are articulating, how has this information that I've just learned changed my thinking? And that to me is the key difference between a project based kind of learning and inquiry based learning.
Yeah. And I think that's a really, really important point, because I think sometimes we may think that we're engaging in inquiry based learning, but like you said, it's still about that end product. And really, inquiry-based learning is about the process and really digging into all of the transformation that can happen in terms of one's own understanding about, you know, our peers, the world around us, even on a global level. And so,
yes, it's like when you take your thinking out and you sort of put it out into the into a broader context where you're not just focusing on this specific topic, but now all of a sudden you're thinking got a little bigger because you've made connections. So just here's a very specific example. So if a child in, say, grade three was doing a project on insects and they were standing in front of the class and doing, you know, their poster, their PowerPoint, and they're saying, you know, I learned that an insect has two eyes and three body parts and six legs and compound eyes and sometimes wings and sort of gave all that information. It's all, that's great. It's interesting. But that's just staying at the content. Mm-hmm. But if a child then was able to say, so what I learned about insects is some insects decompose and some insects make honey and some insects dig tunnels and some insects, you know, eat other little aphids from plants. So what I started thinking about when I was learning about all these different kinds of insects is actually insects are connected to humans in a way that I hadn't really thought about before, because insects actually help us. And if we didn't have them, we probably wouldn't. So there's the difference to me between someone who's just given a project on insects and someone who's really taken it to that next, to me, that's developing understanding.
I love that. And I think that's a really great example of how you push beyond that content is how does what you've learned actually transform the way you think about the world and even these little critters that you've just dug into for the past week or 2 weeks or whatever it is. So I think that's really interesting.
It really is that difference between learning something and understanding something. That's to me the difference. I can learn a whole lot, but not really. True understanding is when there has been that kind of shift, I think.
This has been another episode of Kindsight 101, the podcast. For links to resources mentioned in this episode, visit smallactbigimpact.com and click on our podcast and choose this episode number. Now, I'd love to give my audience a heads up about my new book, which will provide ideas, actionable strategies, and inquiry-based approaches to creating a kinder classroom through serving the community. Subscribe to my blog for more information. Now, I would love to hear from you. What's the biggest insight that you gain from this conversation? Head over to our website, smallactbigimpact.com, leave a comment on our podcast page, or tag and connect with us on social media with the hashtag smallactbigimpact to share your inspiring story of kindness. Can't wait to hear from you.